Week 126 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts, and what a wild month or two it's been for Iowa football fans, Big Ten football fans in general. I think we can all agree on that. I'm joined by Alex Bratta, and we've got a different guest on our show today. He's been on one time before, host, founder, and operator of the Johnny O Show. John Orgias, you're with us this evening, and John, you're going to provide us a different perspective because we know you're not a sports guy, but you're pretty in tune with what's going on as far as the virus and how it's affected life. Of course, you're closer to Iowa City than we are, although I don't think it really matters because here in Ames, we've had quite an outbreak as well. But we appreciate you jumping on with us this evening.
All right. Sounds good.
Alex, like I said, it's been a wild week. We know that last time we had the crew goes on, we talked a little bit about, well, we talked a lot about Big Ten and their decision-making. And we're going to talk about that again here. We're going to keep this podcast shorter than the normal, whatever it's been, hour and a half, 2 hours. We're not going to go that long. So we're gonna kind of condense this thing. We've also got a special guest, another guest coming on here in just moments from now to talk a little Iowa hoops. So we've got a full show for everybody. And again, we appreciate everybody being on with us this evening. One thing I did want to run through, and it's typical for us to do this on the show, is talk a little bit about recent NBA scores, Alex. The NBA playoffs continue, and although we don't have our quote-unquote insiders with us this evening, we've had an interesting week, haven't we, as far as results in the NBA. The Bucks falling down 3-0. Although I'm just now seeing this, I didn't catch the game at all today, and maybe, Alex, if you did, you can fill our listeners in. The Heat had a chance to sweep the Bucks today, lose in overtime. The Bucks survive and push the game to 5, 118 to 115 in overtime. Alex, did you watch the game today?
Yeah, I saw the second half, or most of the game, actually. Giannis got hurt pretty badly, rolled an ankle, and didn't play for about the second half of the game. And it was really close throughout. Miami had a chance. They missed a lot of shots at the end. And Tyler Harrow made... Harrow made a couple big threes at the end of overtime in vain. And the Bucks came out with the win. So, you know, it was a close game. Adebayo's playing like a beast. Butler's playing well. You know, I'm kind of glad it didn't end on a sweep with Giannis out. And I'm hoping he comes back in the next game because I'd like to see them at full strength if they're going to win or lose against the Heat. So,
not to get a debate going early on here, but haven't they been at full strength? I know Giannis tweaked his ankle in game three, but this series was three games to nothing, and to me it looks like the Heat are the much better team, and I stand by what we talked about the Kirkos last week, that I don't think Giannis is the best player in the world, and I think this is proof of that. If they lose this game, this series, in six or less games, I'll go out on a limb and say that the Bucks are probably never going to win an NBA title, and people can say that's crazy to say that here in 2020 when they've got so many young, talented guys, but I mean, they've been thoroughly dominated by the Heat. And, of course, I didn't watch the game today. Do you foresee this game? I mean, did the Giannis injury look serious? And I mean, was it the same ankle that he rolled last game?
Yes, I think it was. And
so
it didn't look terribly serious when you saw it, but it's hard to know with an ankle. It was kind of at a little funny angle. It didn't roll. Like, sometimes you see them roll, like, 90 degrees. It didn't look like that, but it's hard to tell.
Okay, so am I correct in saying that was the only game today, or am I? No, we've got Rockets-Lakers going on right now as we're recording this. That game's early, and of course, by the time we get done, that game will be complete. Rockets did win the first game. Alex, if you're a Lakers fan, are you concerned at this point, or is that just kind of a blip on the radar to lose to Westbrook and Harden?
Not yet. You know, I think if you follow LeBron's teams, you're kind of used to him losing a lot of times the first game of series. He did it to the Blazers in the last series, and came back and it wasn't even close. So I'm not saying that's going to happen here. It won't. But the first game, you know, I think LeBron, especially, he kind of uses a game to feel out his opponent and then make adjustments. So it'll come down to how they make adjustments to deal with mainly, I think, offensive adjustments, because the Rockets pretty much dominated inside, which is a total joke considering they're totally undersized. So I think the Lakers have the tools to be able to win this series. It's just going to be a matter of implementing them.
And we've also got a close series. Man, the Celtics were about to go up 3-0 if it weren't for a miracle three-pointer from OG Anunoby off a pass from Kyle Lowry. What a pass that was. I know there was a lot of debate on if Taco Fall should have been the guy. I mean, he's what, 7'6", 7'5", and he's guarding Kyle Lowry on the out of bounds play, and he wasn't vertical. He's hopping back and forth, giving Kyle Lowry a good viewpoint of the court, and boy, you don't want to do that with one of the better point guards in the league. And that's given the Raptors life. They win today 100-93, and that series is tied at 2 apiece. So we've got Raptors-Celtics tied at 2 apiece. We've got the Heat leading the Bucks 3-1 after the Bucks survive today and avoid a sweep. We've got the Houston Rockets leading 1-0, game 2 going on right now. And then the other series we haven't mentioned, the Nuggets and Clippers, which the first game was pretty dominant as far as the Lakers' performance, or the, excuse me, the Clippers' performance is concerned. The Nuggets got thoroughly dominated, but what a way to respond. I mean, they basically dominated the entire game in game 2. The Clippers did make a run late, but it was the Jokic show from outside. We saw guys, of course, Jamal Murray had a good start, kind of faded late in that game, but the Nuggets have tied that series up at 1 apiece, and I'm still not buying into the Clippers, Alex. I know Paul George is playing better than he was early on against the Mavs, but I still go back to that Mavericks series. I think if Porzingis were healthy, if Doncic were healthy, I mean, those are your two best players. Those are two superstars. I still think Dallas would have won that series, and you've got a healthy Nuggets team. I think the Clippers are not only in trouble to not win the championship this year, I think they're in trouble to get out of this series.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Nuggets are kind of a confounding team because, you know, the last few years they've been at the top of the Western Conference during the regular season, and then they disappear. And I think it really has to do with Jokic and Murray. Both these guys, they can either play like Superman or they can play like role players, and they do that in the playoffs. They did that against Utah. Utah blew them out by like 40 points. They come back, reel off 3 in a row, and win the series. They did that in the first game against LA. Jamal Murray didn't show up. Jokic didn't show up. And it's like these guys, they don't realize, I'm not sure what it is, they don't realize how good they are. I think that's definitely true with Jokic, or he's lazy. I'm not sure. I don't know that it's that, but he does look that way sometimes. So, you know, that's why they're a dangerous team, but that's, I think, also why they've gone nowhere in the past few years. But that duo is a really, really deadly duo. But as far as the Clippers, yeah, you know, Paul George has had his troubles showing up in playoffs for years now, and Kawhi is pretty solid. I mean, he's pretty much a robot. Goes about his business. He didn't have a great game this last game, but you can count on him. But, you know, they don't have a ton of firepower if Paul George is not playing well. Lou Williams obviously is a good scorer, but other than that,
yeah, there's some firepower with Lou Williams.
It's definitely there, but you know, I really think that Paul George is the key to that team. If he plays well, I think that team is probably the favorite. And if he doesn't play well, I don't think they're there. I think they may be a couple spots down. So it'll be interesting. I mean, we've got several
right now. The Heat to me are the favorites. I mean, they're playing better than anybody. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. The Lakers have had good stretches, obviously. We saw the Clippers have had good stretches. But nobody's consistently winning games but the Heat. In fact, this game today was their first loss in the playoffs. And the Pacers aren't no slouch. I mean, they thoroughly dominated the Pacers in a sweep last series, and they nearly, I mean, that would have been 8-0. 8-0 in the playoffs had they won today. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Alex, Celtics-Raptors, who would you pick? And that series got 2 apiece.
I haven't really watched it. I picked the Celtics early on and was feeling pretty good about that. And then they turned it around. Now they're tied up. So I think the Celtics still will come out. The Raptors, I think, are a smart team, and they play greater than the sum of their parts, kind of like the Heat do. But I think the Celtics will probably win out in a 7-game series.
I think you're underestimating the Raptors' parts a little bit, being that they have Siakam, Lowry, and Van Vliet, who I think he's on the All-Star level now. But I agree with you. I mean, I think the Celtics are probably the favorites in that series, although I picked the Raptors to be a surprise out of the East as the playoffs started. And you'd go Clippers over Nuggets?
That's a tough one. I would if I had to bet, but, you know, if the Nuggets, if they play like like they have the potential to. I think, you know, that they can basically play a two-man game, and if neither of those guys, you know, Murray and Jokic, get in foul trouble, it's very hard to stop those two because they both have pretty complete games. So I could honestly see them pulling it out. It would be kind of hard for me to see them going the distance in 2 7-game series in a row. I think the Clippers are probably more of the slow and steady wins the race in that case, but I don't know. I think they do have a puncher's chance.
Well, let's remember, though, the Clippers did get pushed to 6. So, I mean, I know you're saying 7 games, you know, not a whole lot of difference between going 6 and 7. I mean, there is, but there isn't. So the Clippers have played a lot of basketball, too.
I'm talking about the Nuggets.
I know.
Well, I'm not talking about their fatigue. I'm talking about if the Nuggets have the mental fortitude to go 14 games in 2 series.
I mean, I think we've learned a lot about Paul George's mental fortitude in these playoffs. So I wouldn't count on him to be your rock mentally down the stretch of it. I mean, he's already talked about his struggles with, he's missing his family. And I'm not trying to downplay that, but I mean, heck, you're in an NBA bubble. You're in the playoffs, and he's talking about how he can't deal with his anxiety. And I think it's an excuse personally, but I don't know. We'll see. What about Rockets, Lakers? I'm definitely going Lakers in this one, although, you know, again, going by that first game, the Rockets look pretty good. Would you take L.A. at this point?
I'd take L.A., but, you know, the Rockets, they had a very impressive showing in Game 1. I mean, I know we texted about P.J. Tucker and how he held Anthony Davis to 0 points every time he was guarding him. I mean, they pretty much dominated inside, and A.D. was fairly passive taking jump shots and stuff, and he's got like 6 inches on these guys, and that's not even mentioning McGee and Howard, who aren't the most skilled guys but still have the size, and they're just not so far been able to dominate inside. Now I'm seeing AD starting to dominate right now. I'm actually watching the game, so I think that will turn around, and I have to pick the Lakers probably.
And I definitely go in Heat anyway. The Bucks can be the first team in NBA history to win 4 straight and come back from 3-0 down, especially with a hurt Giannis.
Yeah, doesn't seem likely. I think the Heat are probably my favorite team left just because the way they play. They're actually a little bit underrated, I think, because they have such excellent shooting. You look at they got some pure straight-up shooters on that team. Olenek, Robinson, Tyler Hero, and there's a few others, but you know, they do have score. Jay Crowder has been shooting pretty well. They have some good scoring, along with the fact that they just play hard. I don't know if you watched them, but Adebayo has just been a monster. He's like 6'9", and he's dominating, rebounding, getting rebounds. Like today, he had 3 guys surrounding him, and he didn't have a chance at the board, but because he kept fighting for it, he actually got a jump ball, went up on the ground, got the jump ball, and they got a free possession. I mean, stuff like that is how you win when you don't have the most firepower. And I think they're playing as well as they possibly could for the personnel they got on that team. So I'm definitely rooting for them.
Yeah, I don't see the Bucks. I'm just shocked they were able to win today. But hey, they are one of the better teams in the NBA. I'm not going to take that away from them, but I definitely don't think they're the best. I definitely don't think Giannis is the best player in the league. I'm not going to get into that debate again, but okay, so we've talked NBA, and we've got a lot of playoffs left, and even though the Mavs are out, I know I'm enjoying it because, as we're going to segue in here, the Big Ten is still on hiatus. We don't know when the Big Ten is coming back, if it's coming back this year, and there's been a lot of discussion on that. So before we're going to get into our guest interview here in a moment, let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten situation. And again, we've got John Argias on, which I thought would be a good viewpoint. He'd provide a good viewpoint, again, kind of away from sports, but a little bit, you know, kind of fresh on this matter. Alex, let's refresh John. Let's kind of get John up to speed as far as what's been happening over the past month or two. I think I tried to Google Big Ten timeline because I was going to put together a timeline of my own to kind of give him a rundown of this saga, and that's what it's been. It's been a saga. It's been a nightmare. It's been an embarrassment for the Big Ten, and I couldn't find anything, and I should have made my own, but it was just too much work, and I just didn't do it. But I'll kind of give John, I'll kind of give you a breakdown of what's been happening. You've got the Big Ten Conference that, of course, all conferences, you've got the Power 5, you've got the Big 12, you've got the Big 10, you've got the SEC, you've got the ACC, and you've got the Pac-12. Those are the major players in college football, right? You've got 10 to 14 teams in each league. And so all these different power conferences are governed by the NCAA, which, of course, you know what the NCAA involves. It's supposed to be academics first, but it's really athletics first. But the problem with college football, as we've really seen this year, is that there's no commissioner. There's nobody that's really calling the shots on college football. It's a weird situation to where the basketball championships and all the other championships, where you're talking lacrosse, hockey, wrestling, all these other championships, are basically all governed. The actual tournaments and championships, as well as the seasons, are governed by the NCAA, and that's basically it. There are conference commissioners that can do certain things within the conference, but basically what happens on a major level is governed by the NCAA. But we're seeing with college football this year that you've got the College Football Playoff Committee. You don't have a tournament. You don't have an NCAA tournament or an NCAA championship with football. You've got a college football playoff. So it's a weird situation where the actual playoffs are not governed by the NCAA. College football, although the rules are in place by the NCAA, it's not governed by the NCAA. It's a really odd situation. And so what's happened this year with this virus, everybody's wondering, oh, who's going to play, who's not going to play. Everybody kind of assumed, well, either we play or we don't. Well, we've seen two conferences opt out of playing. We've seen three conferences say they're going to play. And then all the non-Power 5 conferences, you got probably a dozen non-Power 5 conferences, what we call mid-major conferences, that are still Division I, that also made unique decisions, again, within their own conference. Conference commissioners made the decisions along with presidents and whatnot. So what happened with the Big Ten is about a month ago, and Alex, I think it was August 10th or 11th. Well, actually, before that, I think right about a month ago, might have been the 6th, Alex, and maybe you can Google this while I'm speaking on this, but the Big Ten came out and said, here's our schedule. They had announced previously they were going to go with a 10-game schedule. They were going to shorten it from 12 games, and they were going to say, we're not going to play any out-of-conference games. In other words, we're not going to play Iowa State. We're not going to play, Louisiana Monroe or Miami of Ohio or Northern Illinois, some of these small schools that can kind of fill the schedule. They're saying we're going to play only conference teams or only going to play in the Big Ten. So they said we're going to do a 10-game schedule, and about the sixth day of August, they came out with this revised schedule, got everybody excited. It wasn't, 4 or 5 days, Alex, later, the Big Ten comes out and says, we're not playing football. And didn't give a reason. In fact, Kevin Warren made the announcement on Big Ten Network. You can watch that announcement on YouTube. I encourage you to, because it's a very enlightening announcement where Kevin Warren just frankly sounds like a politician. They asked him questions. He basically gave the political answer. He was pressed on a couple of questions, which I praise the Big Ten Network for doing, because they work for the Big Ten, but yet they pressed their commissioner, and he just didn't answer questions. And it just erupted a firestorm. Parents, players, fans, even coaches, and some athletic directors just throwing this guy under the bus, throwing mud on him. And I don't want to say I'm throwing mud on him either, but I was kind of one of these guys that was sort of in agreement with a lot of these parents and players, because there was no transparency from the commissioner. And of course, there's a lot that goes into these decisions, which we're going to be talking about. But the lack of transparency has been a joke. Now, maybe 2 weeks ago, the conference came out to respond to all these. They even had protesters. You may have heard this, protesters in Rosemont, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago at the Big Ten offices. Parents came to protest these decisions with the hashtag We Want to Play. We had the best player in the country, Justin Fields, who's a quarterback for Ohio State, had a petition of about 300,000 people that had signed on to play, trying to get the Big Ten to reverse their decision. The Pac-12, meanwhile, had made the same exact decision to not play, while the other three conferences, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, all said they were going to still play. So it's been just a nightmare of PR for the Big Ten. And again, 2 weeks ago, they came out and they said, we're not changing our decision. They gave some very generic reasons. Well, it's uncertain. The times are uncertain. They use terms, like, I don't want to exactly quote them, but it was basically the increased number of COVID cases across the country does not bode well. blah, 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 blah. They did mention myocarditis, which I know is an ongoing debate, which we're going to talk about. And since then, we've had all kinds of reports come out. First of all, the initial thought was, hey, we're going to play, they're going to try to push this back and play in February, which is a problem for players who are trying to get drafted in the NFL draft in April. Because if you play in February and you're playing late into March or even April, you're interfering with the draft, and a lot of these guys are simply just not going to play. The best players are going to sit out, and then you lose, you know, quality of the game, quality of TV ratings, so you can't do that. So then coaches were trying to push for a January start. We heard start hearing rumblings about January being on the Big Ten's radar. Then about a week ago, we heard rumblings that Thanksgiving, they were going to try to start playing in late November. And then people started reasoning, well, if you're going to play in November, why are we not playing now? Or why are we not playing in October at least? Because the problem with playing, even if you do play in November, first of all, you got to play indoors. So they're going to have to find indoor stadiums across the Midwest to play in. But they're also not going to be able to be in contention for the college football playoff because those other three conferences are not changing their schedule for the Big Ten. They're going to play their college football playoff because they started their seasons in September and finished in November like they're supposed to, and then play the playoff in December. So people, we've heard rumblings about them wanting to play in November. Then a few days ago, we started hearing things. Dan Patrick of NBC Sports reported that the Big Ten would consider playing on October 10th. We heard reports. Again, all these reports are just, I've never heard so many reports, Alex. And I think you can vouch for this. So many reports that we don't know who they're from. We don't know if there's any validity behind these reports. We heard a report that the Big Ten was going to re-vote this past weekend, even though they had said 2 weeks prior that they would not revisit the idea of fall football. So, John, what's your initial reaction?
Oh, wow.
It's a cesspool.
That sounds like an unorganized mess.
Yeah.
So I know me and you've talked about this briefly too, just in general. And one question that comes to mind is you mentioned some of the concerns that the parents were having with, you know, what happens to these kids if they're not doing football. Well,
yeah.
So my question is, I know right now Ames is getting really bad with COVID cases. And I guess my understanding is that is it coming from the college students and the young people?
Yeah, I mean, it's no coincidence that the week everybody came back to campus, all the non-student athletes' cases shot up. We've been pretty low here, and Alex, I know you follow the cases a little bit closer than I do, but we had been pretty low here until the students came back and all the cases shot up.
So I assume that Iowa City and that area, their school is open too, correct?
Yep, and their cases are sky high, as are Blackhawk counties, which of course you know is home to Northern Iowa, the third public university in the state of Iowa.
I guess the biggest thing that makes me ask the question is, if they were so worried about how many athletes are on a football team.
I know what's coming.
How many athletes are on a football team?
100. You're talking a hundred. There's 11 on
this. So
there's 11. There's 11 on each side of the ball, right? 11 starters, but you've got 100 guys on a roster. Some of those guys are on scholarship. Some of them are not. Not all of them travel to away games, but you've got about 100 players on the official roster.
Right. But the big concern is also just the teammates practicing together, right? I mean, they're around each other practicing and.
Well, that's the issue. We don't. I guess that's a concern. But and I'll get into why I I'm not trying to sound like I have all the answers because I don't. But basically, every theory as to why the Big Ten is making this choice, I feel, has been debunked.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if they're going to cancel, to me, I guess what I'm going here is it seems like there's a lot less numbers involved with contact of those kids playing football than there are of the actual kids going to school and then going and hanging out in cars later.
Yeah.
I think the risk is not the football. You know.
Well, that's been my whole point in all this. Now, are cases going to happen? Yeah, of course they're going to happen. Is it going to spread amongst teammates? Sure, it's going to spread amongst teammates. That's no debate. Nobody's trying to debate that. Is there a chance that this season may not finish? And Alex, I know you've said over and over again, you don't think the season, if they play, is going to finish. That's not the debate. Nobody here has ever said, nobody really from the Big Ten has ever said, well, we're not going to start because we don't think we can finish. It's we don't want to start because we're concerned about the safety of the student athlete. And that's my problem with all of this. I still have not heard a valid reason as to why playing football endangers the life of a student athlete. Besides just the obvious dangers of head collisions and, you know, dangers that have always been present with football.
I don't see that it increases their risk. I don't see that they're at any more risk than any of the other hundreds and hundreds of students that are just going to the school. So if we're going to use that as a reason to cancel, then the whole school should not even be open.
Exactly. And the Big Ten allowed, John, the Big Ten, after they canceled 2 weeks ago, the Big Ten allowed teams to continue practicing.
So
explain that. I mean, what, yeah, Alex, we haven't talked about that issue. What is somebody explain how you can cancel the season and say it's okay for teams to continue practicing?
Well, especially when there's not going to be fans. So to me, it doesn't seem like it changes anything. If they're practicing, how's that different than the game? But again, I'm ignorant to all this because I don't really watch sports, but professional athletes have been dealing with this COVID stuff for a while, and there's been games, and there's been as far as like basketball and stuff like that. And so is the spread of basketball. I know they've had some issues come up, but are they having major problems with the professional players that are playing?
Good question. The NBA is in a bubble right now. So they were able to get all the teams that they didn't, not all NBA teams went to this bubble. They're all down in Orlando. They've bubbled them in. In other words, they've basically quarantined every, you know, staff member, player, et cetera, worker. And they've basically kept them from the outside world. And as a result, the NBA tests every week, and they've had zero positives over the past – how many months have they been playing, Alex?
It was like a couple months they've been in the bubble.
Yeah, they've had zero positives from day one. So, but you can't – see, I know what you're going to say next, well, why don't they do it at college? You can't do that because – although I think that you can do it. I think there is a way to do it.
They could do the testing at least.
Well, yeah, that's – so that's another thing. I mean – so they can't bubble them because they're students. And if you bubble student athletes, which everybody wants to do, the players would love to bubble. But the problem with doing that is players have been lobbying for rights to making money off their image and likeness. They've been lobbying for unionization and even compensation from some. And if you start bubbling them and treating them like professional athletes, that's only going to be a problem. That's going to become a problem for the NCAA years down the road. If you're okay treating them as athletes, but you're not willing to compensate them.
So maybe they're doing all this so that you don't have to address that issue. Because if they were to let them play, then this would come up as someone would say, well, why don't we just put them in a bubble? And then this would create a vicious circle to where maybe that's what they're trying to avoid. Maybe that's why. Because I don't see that they're at any more risk than the students going to school. I think that if they were to be told, you cannot, we don't want to see you in bars or anything like that, and if we see you not practicing good social distancing outside of practice, then you could potentially be cut. I think they're taking this serious enough. This is their life. This is their ticket out. A lot of them, is it inappropriate to say for a lot of them, it's their ticket out of a bad situation, or, you know, they're not going to screw this up. So they'll probably be 100% more responsible than the typical. I don't want to sound like a jerk, but obviously if you got a rise of college students getting COVID-19 in Ames because they're shutting down bars, you do the math, you know it's because they're not doing things the way they're supposed to, and that's outside the school. I want to make clear that I definitely think COVID's a real thing. We always try to wear our masks unless for some reason we were stupid and forget. But it's never on purpose that we don't wear our masks, and, you know, just out of respect of others. But I think that they could have, I think they could have managed this and had these players be at a lot less risk than the typical college student, because they could also say to that same player, you got a lot more to lose if you don't social distance and do everything by the rules. Is that an incorrect assumption on my part, or does that seem reasonable?
No, that's what I've been saying the whole time. I had somebody the other day, and I'm not going to say who it is. We've had him on the show in the past. But I had someone text me about this, and they're, I don't want to say they're pro cancellation. This is what this individual had to say about this situation. I asked them, where's your proof that contact football spreads the virus? And his response was common sense. And I said, do you know how this virus spreads? Because, of course, we've learned a lot about this virus over the past few years or past few months. And it's been clear that the virus primarily spreads through the air, through droplets. Now, it can spread on surfaces, we know that, although it seems like as it spreads in smaller amounts over surfaces, it's actually less and less potent, if that's the right word, as it infects the host. But this individual says, he acknowledged that it is in the air mostly, exhaled from someone infected, but it can also be spread through contact with a contaminated surface or individual. Let's see here. And I asked, well, why do you think the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC are all still playing? His response was one word, money, which I find hilarious because I think it's exactly the opposite of that. My issues with that, I have a lot of issues with those lines of reasoning. But going back to what John was just talking about, Alex, let's get you involved here on this note. I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but I'm to a point where I'm so fed up with hearing this holier-than-thou mindset of, oh my God, I can't believe you would think about trying to play football at a time like this. We're in the middle of a pandemic. The health and the safety of the students is all we care about. See, it's that ignorant mindset, and I'm not saying it's ignorant to care about the student-athletes. That's exactly actually the opposite of what I'm saying. See, people who look at the situation and say it's obvious that we should cancel are not looking at the situation. They're not actually doing the research. They're not actually thinking this thing out, because as John mentioned, it's not as simple as, well, it's a contact sport, so you just shut it down. The reality of this, Alex, and I've said it how many times in this podcast, I'll say it again, point blankly for everybody to hear. Football, all right? Yes, it's a contact sport, but Iowa State, what are they doing? They're wearing face shields, not just face masks. They're wearing plastic shields over their mouths, all right? So they're not going to be spitting on. They're not going to be, when they tackle, they're not going to be spitting, or their droplets aren't going to be flying, okay? There's ways around this, okay? And as John mentioned, student athletes are also not only athletes, they're students. You forgot the first part of that phrase, student athletes. So they are going to be students. And what do students do? Besides just the obvious, going to class, spending time in dorms, having roommates, they also go to parties. They also go to bars. They live in dorms, which means that there's common areas of these dorms. And the simple fact is, everybody can say, well, we want to shut down football because of student-athlete safety. You have to, you know, the reasoning from this individual I was talking about over text, the reasoning of common sense should apply in the other way as well. It should be common sense that as much as you think that not playing a contact sport is going to keep these athletes safe, common sense would tell you these kids are not going to quarantine. They're not, okay? The only way that you will give student athletes, and I don't, I'm talking about the majority, and there may be a few here and there. We can't say, you know, matter of factly that nobody will quarantine, but the vast majority of these student athletes, the only way you're really going to get them to really be strict right now, because they're not right now, they're not concerned about their families because their families are back home. Obviously, it gives them motivation to quarantine if they're going to infect grandma and grandpa or mom and dad. they're not concerned about that because they're living the college life, right? These are they look at these as some of the best years of their life. So they are not going to quarantine. The only way you're going to get them to quarantine is by letting them do what they want to do and saying, hey, we're playing football, but if you screw this up, you lose it. That's the bottom line. If anybody wants to look at me and say it's a coincidence that the University of Iowa had basically, I don't want to say zeros, but single-digit football positive cases over the past month, and then as soon as fall sports were canceled by the NCAA and then the Big Ten Conference canceled football, 93 cases this past week in the athletic department and double-digit cases in the within the football team. And if you want to sit here and tell me that's a coincidence that that happened the week after football was canceled, I think that's the most foolish thinking I think you could ever have.
Well, yeah, I think that, like you said, I'm going to say it. Be very careful what people hear me say, because I'm not saying this is what I would do now. I'm saying when I was young, I was dumb. I did stupid things. And unless you had something that you could say, you know, if you do this, you're going to lose something that's really important to you, because you feel invincible when you're young. You feel invincible. You feel like you're at the top of your game. I've always been a nerd. I've always not been the strongest person, but still, I didn't feel like I was 51 years old. My point is, when you're young, you don't think about death. And yeah, I mean, you've got these players now that like you said, they're not going to go home to they're not worried about getting their family sick. And they figure if they get it, they're healthy, they'll be able to beat it. And then the simple mentality that they're young and they think that, you know, death is the furthest. I mean, that's why you see so many young ones do extreme sports. You know, it's not because they want to die. It's because they don't think they can. It's just think back when you were young. Well, you, Corey, you're half my age, but you don't think about those things when you're young. I mean, and if there's no consequence except to yourself,
we all know. The data says that these young people are not going to die. I mean, there's always exceptions, but the data overwhelmingly says that if you're between 18 and 24, you're going to catch this virus, probably be asymptomatic and recover just fine. And I'm not trying to say that there's no risk, because we don't know the long-term risks, definitely, but the kids definitely aren't concerned about dying with this virus.
Right. Well, you take the data that we have and you put it in a young person's mind. Remember how we saw some of them? And I'm not saying these kids are like this at all, but I'm saying remember the kids that were out on the beach that acted like this is no big deal. Well, that's how they think. That's how a lot of young ones think. And some are considerate enough to think about other people and some aren't. Or some figure they're not in a situation they're going to hurt other people and they're not worried about themselves. So, yeah. That's my take on it. It doesn't make sense to cancel the sport. They could do more checking because they're currently athletes and they're currently participating in the sport. And you could say, you know, we got to do these tests at once a week, and you can't do this, and you can't do this, you can't do this, or you're out. They lose all that control for sure by saying there's no football this year. They just lost that control. And yeah. So now those players are just like every other student that has nothing to lose except maybe getting sick. And if they're unlucky enough to have a body that reacts really poorly to this disease, then that could happen to them. But in their mind, that's not how they're thinking. They're thinking, I might get sick, whoop-de-doo. That's what a lot are thinking. That's why it's getting worse. I've even talked to grown adults my age that still think that this is all political. Yes, I think politics is making this virus into something it's not, but it's definitely real. It is a real thing, and you know, you'll see a post where somebody says the CDC said only 6% were caused by the virus. Okay. But the other 94% were their deaths were exacerbated by the virus. Maybe right. they would have lived another 5 years. Maybe they would have lived another 10 years. But the virus exasperated whatever existing condition they had, and it killed them now. So, yeah, okay, yeah, 6%, according to the CDC site, have died from this virus and only this virus. That still doesn't mean it can't kill you.
No.
It can.
That's correct. And it can.
Grown adults are missing this. So I think the biggest leverage they had, and I'll get off my soapbox, the biggest leverage they had is by saying to these athletes, here's something tangible that you will lose if you don't behave responsibly during this period of time. That one thing they've taken off the table. So now, as far as the students are concerned, there's no consequences. I hope that makes sense.
We see that. Yeah, I mean, we see that across the country. You can look up numbers of all these different schools. It's amazing the number of Big Ten schools that the athletes are still testing out 0000. And I think, I really do believe that it's because a lot of these schools still hold out hope that they could maybe play the season and the Big Ten reverses their decision. Because there's a lot of outbreaks across these Midwest schools, not just Iowa. There's a lot of outbreaks because the kids are back on campus. And the bottom line is to say the football is going to spread the virus. Okay, even if it did, and I'm not saying it does, because I still don't have – there has not been a single speck of proof that has come to me that says that these teams can't contain it to a point. I mean, again, we're talking face shields. We're talking constant disinfecting. They've got testing. We've even heard this past week the White House reached out to the Big Ten, and basically from numerous reports we're being told that the president offered the Big Ten, and I'm talking the president of the United States, offered the Big Ten daily saliva tests, which have been developed, I believe, by Yale and Illinois. Just came out with a saliva-based test at a very, very low rate. The previous tests were like $45 a test. You know, you times that by 100 players weekly, it starts to add up. But no, these are $5 a piece, $4 or $5 a piece. And so it's affordable. They can test every single day. You'd rather send them away from that. You'd rather send them away from the testing, from the constant monitoring, and send them back to on-campus instruction. And even if they're not being instructed on campus, they're staying in those campus. You know, they're not leaving. Most of them are not leaving town. All right. I live in a college town. I understand. They're not leaving town. Okay. You can put them all online only. Kids are still going to gather. They're going to gather in houses. They're going to gather in frat houses. They're going to gather if the bars are open, which right now, the governor has shut down the bars in the major college towns here in Iowa. But they're still going to find ways to be together. So again, if you gave me the choice of, as far as strictly student athlete health and safety, if you gave me the choice between quarantine, complete quarantine for players or football, I'm going to pick quarantine. Okay. I want to make this clear. I'm endorsing the player safety. We have to use common sense on this. They are not. Quarantine is not an option. They are not going to quarantine as much as they probably should or could. They will not. So we have to weigh reality. Reality is, where are they safer? Are they safer with this monitorization and the testing? And again, like John emphasized and I've emphasized, the motivation to be strict when they're away from the field, the motivation to stay home and not go to the bars, not to party. Or are you okay with taking that away from them, taking away the testing and the monitoring and saying, go back and do your college thing? So don't tell me that it's about student health and safety. I saw this Penn State doctor this past week that said a third of all positive cases of coronavirus with athletes have shown signs of myocarditis. It wasn't, I don't know how many hours, 8 hours later that the Penn State released a statement and said, whoa, 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 that story was misconstrued. That's actually not the truth. It was more like 10 to 15. So there's all these reports out there. I think of a lot of these people that simply don't want football. I think the Big Ten's decision, and I think a lot of this is probably the president's. We've put a lot of blame on Kevin Warren, but as we're learning, there was a vote, and it was the president's that voted this down, and it was overwhelmingly in favor of canceling. 11-3, the only three schools that voted to play were Ohio State, Nebraska, and, what do you know, Iowa. But I think these presidents, as I've said all along, even though there's some legal advice that has said, well, they can't be sued, they can't be held liable if somebody gets it. I still think it comes back to liability. When they come on the air, when Kevin Warren comes on the Big Ten Network and says, we did this for student athlete health and safety, I see him lying through his teeth, because as we just ran through, I don't in any way believe that these student athletes are safer with football canceled. I think it's a fear of litigation. It's a fear of, hey, if they can prove down the road, if they do end up getting myocarditis, which is possible, but again, it's just as possible, if not more possible, if they're not playing football and they get the virus, that they could get myocarditis. We're going to make that very, very clear. But I think they're afraid of litigation down the road. If they can trace that back to, hey, you put my son in danger, or you put me in danger. And even though I don't think that would be a rational case, the Big Ten would rather take the hit and not get the revenue, TV revenue for schools. Obviously, fans weren't going to become swarming these towns anyway, so the local economies were already going to be devastated. But they'd rather take that temporary hit than risk potential litigation years down the road. That's my stance on it. Alex, have you changed your viewpoint over the past week?
Not really. You know, I wasn't really buying the student athlete safety in and of itself argument. I don't think I ever did. As far as them being concerned with that coming back on them, universities, as far as, you know, if somebody were to die, that's an obvious motivation. One thing I would like to clear up as far as you're talking about face shields is face shields are good and they will stop the majority of transmission, but there is still the possibility of aerosol transmission without having an actual mask that seals around your face. So it's not impossible for the virus to still spread through football. The kids would have to be wearing basically N95s or something better than that, which is not possible for an athlete because they restrict your breathing too much. So there still is the possibility that if you had an infected player on a field playing football, that he could spread it to somebody else. But
sure,
like you're saying, you know, the likelihood of them, and this is an opinion, this would be impossible to prove, but I agree with you on, I think the likelihood of them, of the average football player catching coronavirus due to football is lower than if they were not playing football.
I believe I believe it's much lower, but yeah, go ahead.
And I would lean that way for a lot of reasons. And, you know, like you said, there's 11 football players already that tested positive was it last week? And that's when they obviously know that the season is not going to happen. So, by the way, I did look that up on the date when they announced the cancellation. I believe that was August 10th because wasn't that the day the storm came through?
Yeah. The Big Ten's decision, that would normally on any other year have been the biggest news story of maybe the entire year for a lot of Iowans, but it became the second biggest story of the day because of that derecho. So here's a couple stats I just want to throw out there. I will admit this is anecdotal evidence, but when you continue to provide this evidence, this data, and the numbers don't lie. I mean, when you compile a lot of numbers, that's called science, in case people didn't know that. Here's a stat that I thought was interesting. Boston College, of course, they're in the ACC and they are playing. Right, they're going to be playing. I believe the ACC starts this week. I know the Big 12 starts this week. We had some games on Saturday. We had a game between a couple smaller schools the week prior that was nationally televised. But in all, since late June, Boston College has administered 1,766 tests to football student athletes and coaches as well as staff. One positive case in 1,766 tests since late June. One positive case. According to Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports, the one positive case occurred when student athletes returned to campus in late June. And, of course, this kid has since recovered. Again, anecdotal evidence, I know, but that's, I think, a microcosm of what we're seeing across the country. Alex, you mentioned how it is possible to spread. I agree. But the whole point is, if you don't have it, you can't spread it. So, you know, we saw Oklahoma a few weeks ago. they had had no positive cases. They send kids home for 2 weeks. They come back. They do testing, and they had 9 positive cases. I mean, it's just to me. It's just it's so damning. Really, it really is for a lot of these decisions that have been made, not only by the Big Ten but the Pac-12. Of course, the Pac-12 has not had as much pushback because I don't think Pac-12 fans really care. I'm sure the players care, but fans don't really care. I don't think the conference does either. The conference kind of blows anyways. As far as the Power Five, they've been at the bottom of the Power Five conference as far as, I don't know, perception and results. I mean, who have they had that done anything? Oregon won a championship several years back, but USC and UCLA used to be powerhouses. They've been garbage. I know Washington made the playoff at least 1 year, but for the most part, the Pac-12 has not been a factor. Here's an interesting fact, and Steve Dace of the Bigger Ten podcast and Michigan podcast, he also runs, because I know you don't like Steve Dace. I like Steve Dace. I think he's, I listen to him, and although he can kind of be like a kind of a blowhard at times, I do think he understands what he's talking about. This was retweeted by Steve Dace this week. The Big Ten wants you to believe that it cares more about its players than the service academies do. Why can he say that? Well, Army and Navy are both, they both are playing football this weekend. Army played yesterday, Navy plays tomorrow night. So are you going to sit here and tell me that the Big Ten cares more about its athletes than the service academies do? I mean, here's another piece of evidence as far as football spreading the virus, which I know we keep going back to. I think the bottom line is, it is, like Alex said, it's possible that this could spread the virus. And my major point, my major issue with all this is I do think the virus will spread more, just as much, if not much, much more, if they're not playing football. But as far as spread, here's a factor. The NFL, of course, we know they're not bubbling, right? The National Football League is not bubbling like the NBA. But the NFL has nearly completed its training camps and heading into roster cuts, which, of course, was this past weekend, so this was just before roster cuts. They had just one player on the COVID-19 reserve list. One. How many total players in the league? 2,560. 2,560 players in the National Football League. One player on the COVID-19 reserve. Alex, your reaction.
I can't give a reaction because I'm not really aware. You know, I don't know what their situation is, how the players have been acting. It's kind of surprising, I guess.
But my point is, there's contact though. They are playing football. Okay, whether they're playing games or not, they're playing football, and it's not spreading. Either that, or the NFL is lying to us.
Well, I just don't know what precautions they're taking as far as where they're staying and all that. I'm really not up to date with how the NFL is operating. So, it would be nice to know. I mean, if they're just living their regular lives like they normally would any other year, and that's the case, and that would be surprising to me.
Yeah, I'm just so amazed by this. And, of course, a revote apparently did not take place over the weekend. I'm being told, again, these are just anonymous reports, we're being told that the president of Michigan, Schlissel, I think it's Schlissel is his name. He's actually a doctor, and he's the guy that right now, according to some reports, is the guy that's holding up the Big Ten from reversing its decision. Now, John, you mentioned how the virus isn't political. I know the president of the United States contacted the Big Ten. It's turned political in the Big Ten, I think, no question about it, as far as some of the decision-making. I will say this. I would not be shocked if some of these presidents are making these decisions not based on science. Because, again, I'd love to see the science that proves that football is going to spread it, or at least spread it more, because I haven't seen it. I don't think it exists, or the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC wouldn't all be playing. And by the way, Mayo Clinic cardiologist, is it Ackerman? One of the leading cardiologists at Mayo Clinic has basically said, hey, this myocarditis, although it is a factor and it can happen. It happens from a lot of viruses, not just COVID-19. It's not enough to shut this thing down. Duke came out, a major medical expert from Duke, which is one of the most prestigious medical schools in the country. They said, hey, we don't see any reason to shut it down right now. But the point here is, I would love to see the evidence, and I don't think there is evidence, and I would not be shocked. I'm not trying to say it's a conspiracy, but I would not be shocked if some of these presidents, I hate to say this, but we're in, you know, this is the world we're talking about, and there is an election in 2 months, right? And I would not be shocked if some of these presidents, again, I can't say this definitively, but Alex or John, let's go to you, John. Would you be shocked if these presidents lean towards canceling due to political reasons?
Right. So, yeah, to clarify what I meant, just in case, I think you understood what I meant, but just to clarify in case somebody misunderstood, when I said it's not political, what I mean is the virus is a real thing. I was just saying that it's not political in the sense that that it is real and it's not just made up for political reasons.
Right. Yeah, I know what you meant.
Right. Okay. So, but yeah, I do agree strongly that it's being leveraged politically. I mean,
who's to say if Kevin Warren, and from what we heard, Kevin Warren was against football after that schedule was announced. Alex, I think it was like 2 or 3 days after, maybe even a day or two later, after the 10-game conference schedule was released, that we started hearing rumblings that Kevin Warren preferred a spring season, which who the heck prefers a spring season? And especially 2 or 3 days after you release the schedule. But, I mean, who's to say that there weren't 5 or 6 presidents that were really, really, or more? Because a lot of these presidents probably, you know, we don't know all the facts of this thing. And if they were on the fence at all, who's to say that they look at the situation and say, look, we could go 50-50 on this, but if we lean this way, we help this candidate. If we lean this way, we help the other candidate. I could see it being political. I'm not saying it definitely is, but I've just not seen a single piece of data that tells me that they're safer not playing football, Alex.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that's the primary motivation, if it is one at all. If it is, it's in the context of fear of litigation. But, the reasons, let's say I chose to cancel the season, which I honestly have not had an opinion about what they should do from the beginning, just because it just, you know, it's something out of your control. It's just more of a morbid curiosity as to what they do. But, the reasons I could think of is, like I mentioned before, if you start getting cases, regardless of how they're spread, you know, it's hard to even know. But if you start having significant pieces on your team have to be quarantined for 10 days, that could definitely affect the way that things play out and as far as the schedule goes and all that. And it just makes me wonder if somebody like Kevin Warren, if he's looking at possibility of doing a spring season, maybe he's thinking, well, by then we know we can play, or he has a pretty good idea that we could play a full schedule without any interruptions. Maybe he's thinking that's better from a monetary standpoint. I don't really know. I think that's a possibility.
I am curious as to why you don't think that any of these decisions could be political.
Well, it's not that I don't think that. I just haven't really thought about it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me because there's so much going on. I'm just, as far as making the connection, how that would influence, especially if it's an anonymous vote, you know, how one president voting a certain way would influence anything, you know, if that's
well,
not.
I can tell you why. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm neutral when it comes to I don't give a flying, you know, potato what happens with this election. All right. If you've ever seen a potato shooter, those things can fly. But what I was going to say is, I mean, it could be influenced this way, Alex. There's several states, as you know, just not because we care about politics, just because we all took government in school, right? We all understand to a degree how these things work. There are several swing states, Michigan being one, Penn State being another, Ohio being another that are that I say Pennsylvania that are major swing states. Okay, and they were swing states 4 years ago in the primary election. And if people are ticked off because football doesn't happen, and we all know in Penn State, in Pennsylvania with Penn State, in Ohio with Ohio State, in Michigan with Michigan and Michigan State, football is almost religion. It's not like the SEC, but it is very, very, very important to people there. And if you take football away from them, literally, during the time that the election is taking place this fall, who are they going to blame? Who are they going to be mad at? And you're not going to be able to convince me that that wouldn't affect their voting choices. That's all I have to say on it.
Well, yeah, even if that's not the motivation for it, it definitely would affect their choices.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, again, I'm not saying that the president's outwardly that was the decision, but it has to. I think, again, these are people in the world that are influenced, unfortunately. This should not have been political at all. And I'm not saying it definitely was, but I would not. I'm grasping at straws trying to figure out again why the Big Ten's not playing, and yet these other conferences are all playing. Alex, we had a game between Central Arkansas and Austin Peay. Today is the 6th. We're recording this on Sunday the 6th. I want to say it was it August? Alex, can you look up that game real quick? August 27th or August 28th? Do you remember what Austin Peay and Central Arkansas, the first official college football game of the season, when that was?
Let me look it up. I remember you talking about it, but let's see.
But see, that game was
29th. Does that sound right?
What did I say?
I don't remember what you said, but it's saying Saturday the
29th. Okay. So it's been a week and a day, right?
Yeah.
That game took place just fine. And since then, John, there have been zero cases with either team. All right? Central Arkansas played again this weekend. No problems. I think we're going to continue seeing that. Now, there's going to be interruptions. I'm not claiming there's not going to be interruptions. And Alex, you talked about being able to finish the whole season if there's a lot of players that get the virus. That's never been my argument with this. I've always said there's going to be interruptions. The idea that you're going to be able to play and nobody get the virus, that's not going to happen. You may have to postpone a game. You may have to cancel a game or two. But why in the world?
Yeah, I think the point is just, sorry, Corey. Yeah, that it's not, they're not at any more risk.
Yeah, why would you, why would that be the basis for canceling the season? Why would you say, we're not even going to try? Why would you say we're not even going to try, knowing, there's a risk that it gets shut down. There's a risk. If everybody gets infected, well, first of all, actually, there's not a risk that it gets shut down. I take that back. Unless all chaos breaks loose, if you have a large swath of kids get it, a team could be out for a couple of weeks. But they're going to be back in a couple of weeks because a lot of these kids are asymptomatic. And within 2 weeks, they're going to be testing negative again, Alex. So... I don't know how the fear of maybe not making it unscathed is reason to stop the show either.
Well, one thing that would be interesting, and I'm not sure how the NBA has handled this because they had a lot of players prior to the bubble that got infected. I'm not sure if they are having to be, if they had to be tested negative to be able to enter the bubble. Do you know if that's true?
Yeah, they did. They tested them. Yeah, they tested. I know they tested them at the outset of that. So I'm assuming if they had tested positive, that they wouldn't be able to enter the bubble. I don't think anybody's allowed into the bubble without testing negative first.
Well, it's interesting because we've seen a lot, and I guess this is true with other viruses. I don't know much about them, but is some people testing positive long after they've completely cleared the virus. So whether or not that's happened in the NBA, I was just curious about. But that could potentially pose a problem, because what you end up having happen is, even after the virus is completely been cleared in your body, there's still viral debris, they call it, that hangs around that PCR tests can actually pick up on. And so you can actually test positive when you're totally free of the virus, not contagious in any way, shape, or form. So I'm just wondering if that could be potentially an issue, if they have end up having a requirement that you have to test negative, I'm not sure how that would play out.
Alex, do you foresee a scenario possibly here where the Big Ten, of course, we keep hearing October 10th, October 10th, October 10th. Well, Iowa did have to shut things down because of all these cases last week, which again happened right after they said no football. But they'll be back. I think they're going to be back after Labor Day, which I believe is that tomorrow? Labor Day's tomorrow?
Yeah.
So they're going to be back after Labor Day. Now, cases are going to skyrocket on Labor Day. There's just no question about that. They're going to skyrocket, especially in college towns and beach towns. That's just not – you can put all the mandates in effect as you want, and I'm not condoning it, but cases are going to go up based on Labor Day. But Iowa's going to be back. My question is, if they say – you know, we keep hearing October 10th. If these reports are true and the Big Ten has been looking at October 10th and they're trying to get Schlissel or whoever else to get on board to get a majority vote to vote in favor of playing – my question is, like, how long can you wait before you announce we're playing October 10th? I mean, how long can you stretch this on, Alex? Because, you know, Ferentz at one point said we need at least 6 weeks to be game ready. Well, if they said October 10th at the end of this week, we'd be looking at just under 4 weeks. Well, we'd actually be looking right at 4 weeks. So, I mean, can they wait until the end of the week and give the – Jim Harbaugh came out this week. Jim Harbaugh, head coach of Michigan, was actually at the protest that happened at Michigan yesterday. And he said to reporters, we're ready to go. We could be ready in literally 2 weeks. Now, I think he's a little bit more, you know, bang your head against the locker type, whereas Kirk Ferentz is probably not – Kirk Ferentz wants to play. There's no question about that. And I think they'd play if they were told to play, but – I think Kirk would obviously prefer a lot more time than that. But these players have been practicing and training and strength and conditioning since June. You think they could wait another week and still play October 10th, Alex? Because if they don't play October 10th, if they say October 24th or October 17th, the problem with that is, although we'd all be happy because they're playing in the fall, I don't know that it's possible. They'd have to really reduce the schedule in order to compete for the college football playoff. There has been some speculation that maybe the playoff committee would consider pushing the playoff back. But again, Dabo Swinney of Clemson, other schools, other conferences are saying, hey, we don't want the college football playoff pushed back just because the Big Ten didn't get their crap together sooner. So what's your outlook on this? How long do we have to wait here? Because it doesn't sound like, even though the Big Ten said, we're not playing, we're not revisiting the issue of playing, it sounds like they've been revisiting. I mean, there's too many reports out there, I think, for none of this to be true. They're definitely talking. They're definitely discussing this. Whether or not it happens, we'll see. But, I mean, what's your thought on timeline right now?
Well, I think they do have a little bit more time. As far as, you know, 6 weeks, yeah, that's probably ideal in an ideal world. But nothing about 2020 is ideal. So, you know, something like that, people are just going to have to adapt. And I get the feeling that the Big Ten is not going to be very concerned about, you know, the difference between what 4 weeks and 5 weeks or 3 weeks and 4 weeks. So I think they could wait a little bit longer still. But like you said, as far as for the college football playoff, you know, they do have a deadline. So it's got to be fairly soon that they would have to walk back their decision.
And there's no point in starting in October if you're not aiming to be in contention for a playoff spot, right? I mean, we talked about playing in January and we heard November and everybody said, well, why the heck would you be playing in November? Because that means you're out of the playoff race. Because again, the playoff's going to happen in December. Even if they push the playoff back to January, the playoff's going to take place, I guess, late December, early January. Even if you push the playoff back to February, it still doesn't give you enough time. I don't think it's going to happen. But everybody said, well, why are you playing then? There's no, like, that doesn't make any sense. Think about that, this, Alex, and I heard this from a different reporter earlier in the weekend. They were talking about the idea. It actually wasn't a reporter. It was, listen, if you ever get a chance, if you want to just hear good college football talk, Mark Rogers, Mark Rogers TV, listen to Mark Rogers on YouTube. Huge, Matt, he's got like 25,000 subscribers. Really, really good guy. And he's an Ohio State fan. He actually does a portion of the Michigan podcast with Steve Dace, because they go back and forth Michigan fan versus Ohio State fan. But he talked about the idea. Can you imagine if the Big Ten did start in November and they're playing like their eighth game of the season the same, like the day after the college football playoff semifinal? Like, can you imagine how much of a joke that would be? That would just be a total joke. And that's what you're looking at if you're starting in November. So I just, this is how I think. I think they're either playing in January or they're playing in October. And I think we're gonna know within the next week. I can't imagine waiting longer than this week. I just can't imagine. You know, I've heard scenarios of maybe the 17th or the 24th. But, I mean, the thing is, even if you start the 17th or the 10th, you're not giving yourself any flexibility. See, the problem with what the Big Ten did is, and this maybe throw this back to John because we didn't bring this out earlier, but the Big Ten had made this initial schedule back beginning of August and said, we're going to start on the first weekend of September, and we've allowed like three or four bye weeks, basically weeks off for each team, where if we need to cancel games or we need to push the schedule back, we can do that. And they never took advantage of that flexibility that they had built into the schedule 4 days prior. They could have easily said, okay, we're not going to start on September 5th, but let's start on September 26th or October 3rd. And again, utilize flexibility. Now they're in a position to make a on-the-cuff decision with a schedule. Now they're not going to have any flexibility built in. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner. You know, it's funny because that makes me kind of think if they were doing enough work to try and make the season work, you know, do you really think it was the myocarditis thing or something like that that changed their minds? I mean, they obviously were putting an effort to try and make a schedule that would be flexible enough to deal with COVID, and then they just shut down the whole idea. Yeah.
Well, no, I think now it could be COVID or myocarditis. I would not be shocked by that. I've heard that from a lot of people that was the issue. I still don't understand. Like, you're telling me that none of these presidents have thought about what we just got done talking about for the last hour about the fact that, hey, I don't know if you know this, but the kids that get it off the field are probably just as susceptible to myocarditis as the kids who are on the field. So I don't know how myocarditis could be the main factor with this. That's why I keep trying to grasp it. Is it litigation? Is it politics? What is it?
Yeah, it's a good question.
So again, I mean, that's where we're at right now. We are kind of running behind here. I want to get to our interview and wrap this thing up. Hopefully under an hour and a half, because we're already sitting an hour 13. Alex, we had the opportunity this week to speak to one of the incoming freshmen at Iowa, Josh Ogundele. And Alex, you've seen Josh Ogundele, some of his tape. We know kind of how he plays. He's a big guy. I think he's going to be able to take advantage of working with, Luca Garza, who announced he's coming back. But this is going to be an interesting discussion with Josh, because you're going to hear from this interview. He's a very quiet kid, definitely not braggadocious by any means. But it is going to be interesting to see him in an Iowa uniform. And we did talk to him as well about the COVID situation. So here's Iowa incoming freshman Josh Ogundele.
I appreciate you taking the time to come on our show today. And just kind of wanted to catch up with you. I know it's been a whirlwind of a few months, and not just for you, but for everybody, but especially in your situation coming from overseas. Can you kind of talk to our listeners just about what that journey's been like from playing high school ball to being back home with your family to now in Iowa City? What's that journey been like the last few months?
Well, it was crazy, you know, just having to go back home in general, because, you know, I was at home, I wanted to visit family, but then when I found out I couldn't come back, that just changed the whole ball game. You know, it was a waiting game, and I don't like, you know, when you're waiting for something, you never know when you're coming up, going to be allowed to come. So it was kind of, you know, weird. And it took a long time for them to let us back, but I'm just happy I'm here now.
Was there ever any doubt in your mind that you might not make it over here?
No. Coach McCaffrey and the other coaching staff always made it clear, like, we're trying everything we can to get you here. But, I mean, a lot of other people, they even come in now. So it's kind of scary that I might not have come, but I just trust in the process.
Well, and it certainly you've been rewarded for it. What's it been like since you've been on campus? I know things are crazy with the coronavirus, and I know you guys are in pretty rigorous testings when you have been able to work out. What has that been like? Has it been kind of what you expected, or what's life in Iowa City? How's it treating you?
Well, as far as I came back to the quarantine, before I got tested, so it was good, you know. We're lucky at the campus, met the team, or most of the team out here. So, like, it was good, you know. Workouts started, lifting weights, you know, doing the good stuff. But as workouts started, at first it was a bit hard, you know, because for quarantine, like, coming up with quarantine, it's, you know, different because you haven't been working out as much. But it was good, you know, getting into the hang of things. But now, because obviously this week we can't work out, so it's just me just like, you know, going online and stuff like that.
Who are you closest to on this team, Josh? I mean, you got a big freshman class. It's all, you know, it's here as well. But I mean, has anybody kind of taken you under their wing and formed a close bond with you so far?
I think everyone obviously plays a part. Well, everyone of them are cool. We're all cool with each other. You know, they always talk to me. I know, like, a weird thing. So I don't really know if I have a special bond with any, like a crazy special bond with any of them, but we're all close. So I don't
know. It seems like everybody says that this team is really close, and obviously that's huge.
Yeah.
What was your reaction? I know Coach Fran, the day that you arrived in the U.S. was also the day that Luka Garza announced publicly that he was coming back. What was your reaction to hearing that announcement?
I was like, you know, it's great. I can, you know, learn a bit. I can learn from him. Practice with him, you know, it's going to be good to play against another big man that's strong as well and very skilled. So, it was nice to hear him coming back because we're going to have a really good impact in the league this year.
What do you see in Luka's game that you would like to sort of, I don't want to say replicate, but at least take from him? And obviously, you've got, for a big man, from what we've seen on tape, we haven't been able to see in person yet, but you've obviously got feel around the basket. You know how to move your feet. But what do you see from Luka that you feel that you can benefit from?
Maybe just get quicker feet, you know, be able to guard, quicker guard out. I think just as I lose more weight, it will come. And by practicing with the coaches and the way that I skip and stuff like that, it will come. So I think just a matter of time before I get quick feet.
This is an interesting team, obviously, this year. I mean, preseason expectations are huge. We don't know exactly what the season will look like due to COVID and whatnot, but what do you anticipate your role being like for freshman year? I mean, it's kind of a stacked team, and minutes may be hard to come by for some, but what do you look to as far as your role for this team this year?
I think it all depends on how I practice and how I progress, how I lose weight. Anything can happen. I think I just got to stay ready, you know. I could play quite a bit. I could, you know, you never know. Like, I think it just depends on how I practice and how I progress. My body changes throughout the season. So, but I imagine I could play a few minutes, you know, do my role. And I think if I just do the little things, like, just the little things that make most effort play, stuff like that, I could play more. I don't know.
Right. Kind of maybe reverting back a little bit. I know that we kind of followed your recruiting journey here to Iowa. When you initially got some attention from the Iowa staff, I mean, what was your initial reaction to Iowa? Had you ever been to Iowa? I'm assuming you'd never been to Iowa. What was your initial thought when Iowa coaches reached out to you?
At first, they told me they're from Iowa. I said, you mean Iowa State? And they're like, no, Iowa. I was like, oh, okay, I've never heard of that, but did some research. Because my teammate got offered by them before me. So that's when I found out it was like the Big Ten, the very good team. So I was excited. That was probably, I think that was my second time major. So, yeah.
And
I was happy that I was considered a very good player, like good enough to play in the Big Ten. So it was a good day for me.
Definitely, definitely. And I can tell you a lot of fans And I know personal fans, friends of mine have reached out to me and talked about how excited they were. I mean, I think a lot of people were concerned with your situation being stuck overseas and that day with Luka being him announcing he's coming back and you being able to make it to the States, kind of lifted people's spirits. So I know kind of speak in behalf of the fan base, people are excited to see you here. If you had to kind of wrapping this thing up, Josh, if you had to maybe give one major quality or factor that you bring to this squad, I mean, what can fans anticipate that you are going to bring that's unique to you and that can help this team be successful?
I think I'm a very aggressive player and competitive. Obviously, a lot of players hate losing, but like, I take it personal, so I'm just very competitive, very aggressive. I bring a lot of energy. So like, say someone gets an arm one or, you know, makes a great play, I bring a lot of energy to the team and I feel a lot of energy too. If I'm playing the game and there's something crazy going on, something, you know, something that is good alongside, not even just good, even good or bad, I think I've improved that over the years, especially turning negative things into positive things and not letting my head go down. So,
do you consider yourself a natural five, or can you shift to be a four? I mean, you're obviously a big body inside, but you've got that touch. So can you play either position in your mind?
Yes, I don't consider myself a true five. I don't consider myself a true five, especially as I'm losing more weight. I think it's going to be scary what I can do. But obviously, potential is nothing unless I don't work. But it's based on how I work and how my body develops over the next few years. But I see myself playing the four because I don't just stay inside the post. I can stretch out and shoot. I believe I have a very good shot for a big. Not even just a big, I have a very good shot overall. And I can drive in and kick too, so yeah.
If you had to pick an NBA player, maybe that you've sort of modeled your game after, who would you compare yourself to?
Well, a lot of people compare me to Zach Randolph, and I don't know if I like it. because he's not athletic, and that's the one thing I'm working on right now. But I feel like over the next 2 years, if I just keep working, making my body right, working on my athleticism, I could play similar to Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid, yeah. Well, I'll tell you,
one of that motherfucking monster.
Zach Randolph was a very successful NBA player. So if you can make that mark. I think that'd be rather impressive, but you're right. He wasn't the most versatile guy in the world, but I can kind of see where fans are coming from with that comparison, I guess. But if you, as far as freshmen, have you made a special friendship with any? I mean, are you who would you say you're closest to in the freshman class?
I'm friends with all of them. Like, you know, I'm sure with all of them, but I think the people I hang out most with are Tony and Aaron.
Okay.
And
I'm assuming you probably formed a relationship prior to getting here to campus. I mean, what was that like trying to form a relationship when you're overseas and all your guys are back here in Iowa City?
When I was overseas, I talked to them sometimes. I didn't really talk to them all the time. But since I came here, the love was there. You know, these people, we meet each other a lot every day. So, yeah.
And were you able to work out in a gym in overseas? Or were you in like an outdoor park? What was that like? Trying to keep your game polished.
I was in the gym, playing with my friends maybe twice. The rest of it was all outside.
Okay. Yeah.
Rain, you know, sunshine, all of that.
Well, I think we all appreciate the outdoors more this year than ever. I know I can say that for one. So that's not the worst place to be in the world. Well, Josh, we really appreciate you coming on, and best wishes. Stay healthy, stay safe. I know it's an uncertain time for everybody. And whether you guys are playing November, January, whenever, we look forward to seeing you in an Hawkeye uniform.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Josh Ogundele, newest member of the Iowa Hawkeye crew, literally the newest because he, as we talked about, he just made it over from his home country, England. And Alex, I know it's kind of hard to understand because we had issues with trying to record that interview, and we had to do it over the phone. And when you have a guy that has a really cool accent like Josh, it's kind of hard to understand with combine that with the phone issue. So, but Alex, your thoughts on what he had to say and what he's going to bring to the team this year? All right. John, you got any thoughts?
Did we lose Alex?
we may have. What did you think of, I don't know how much you could really pick apart of. Obviously, you're not a real close follower of the Iowa basketball team, but his situation, just to kind of catch you up on what happened with Josh Ogundele, he was over in, he went home when this COVID thing broke out and wasn't able to return due to federal restrictions on him being able to travel back as a foreign, I guess I want to say foreign athlete. Is that the term I'm looking for? But an athlete from a non-U.S. region. So he wasn't able to return home and finally got the clearance to do that. And the day Luka Garza announced he was coming back, Josh Ogundele was able to come into the United States. There were some questions about him being able to make it, and it looked like we've got Alex back on here. Alex, your thoughts on Josh Ogundele and what he had to say and what he's going to bring to this team.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to hear him talk about who he models his game after, especially because, you know, I initially had more of the impression that he was going to be more of a big body, but he sounds like he wants to be more of a skilled, you know, like a four or somebody who can at least stretch the floor. So that's interesting to hear because that's more of the modern player, you know, at his size. That's probably a better model to aspire to. So that was interesting to hear. I wouldn't have known that otherwise. He obviously sounds like a very nice guy, but like you said, his own best attribute is being aggressive on the court. So that'll be big. I think he definitely will have to be in really good shape. We've seen that, you know, Garza is obviously going to get a lot of minutes, and he's a guy who's in very good shape, but he's still a big man. And I think you have to, especially in today's game, be very fit. So it'll be interesting to see how he progresses athletically and as far as fitness. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to see him play. Like you were saying, you know, the team is pretty stacked this year, but it'll be nice to see him get some minutes and be able to prove himself and see if he can, you know, become a more permanent fixture on the floor.
Zach Randolph, what do you think about that comparison? He doesn't like that, but you look at him, he's got kind of the same body type, but he said more of a Joel Embiid. So yeah, you're right. He does want to be, you know, that's one of the knocks on Garza, potentially, I guess, is that he's more of a Kevin McHale, you know, a guy from 30 years ago, probably would have been very, very good in the NBA. And now we don't know. I still think he can be a successful NBA player, but it sounds like Ogundele is trying to model his game more towards the modern day. I mean, Joel Embiid, as much as we knock him being lazy and not having the work ethic, he is the dominant five of 2020 because of his ability to stretch the floor, but yet dominate inside as well. So I don't think either one of those comparisons, I mean, I can tell you, I wouldn't mind being compared to Zach Randolph or Joel Embiid. Those are, especially Zach Randolph's storied career. Wasn't Randolph a multi-year all-star?
I believe so. And I mean, they were, you know, the Grizzlies were quietly a pretty good team for a long time. Randolph was very well respected, even though he was kind of playing out of his time. You know, he's more of a player that would have fit in the 90s or another generation, but you know, to aspire to be better than that is, you know, pretty high aspiration. So, you know, that's a good thing, I guess. Cause like you said, it's not a terrible thing to be compared to a permanent starter on a regular playoff team in the NBA for like the better part of a decade. So it's good that he has high aspirations.
Well, that was fun. Thanks to Josh for coming on our show. I want to thank Matt Weitzel, Director of Communications with the Iowa men's basketball team as well, for arranging that interview. And hopefully we'll get to have Josh on again at some point. Final thoughts here as we wrap up this podcast as it relates to basketball. We have heard, according to reports, we're supposed to hear this officially within the next week or two, Alex, that the Big Ten is or actually the NCAA, because the NCAA has been full with basketball. They're planning on starting, I believe, November 25th or that last week of November. So they were originally supposed to start early November, like the 10th, pushed it back a couple weeks, but they've been talking about what day they'd start, and it sounds like they got a plan. It sounds like they've got a lot more leadership, and I think it's more, obviously more feasible that this can work with basketball. They can't bubble necessarily like the NBA, but they can do smaller bubbles. I think we've heard that the Big Ten trademarked the term. Apparently somebody got an open records request on this. the NCAA trademarked the term here like a week ago, battle in the bubble.
Mm.
So, which it kind of got my juices flowing, you know, at least that, you know, they got a plan. At least that's more than we can say. John, I think we can agree that's more than we can say for the Big Ten.
Yeah, I would agree. At least there's a plan.
Right. They've got a plan, and so we'll hopefully get to see. And I do think Josh will play. I do think Josh Ogundele, Alex, I know we've talked about it, and we'll have a basketball preview in the coming weeks, but Josh Ogundele is going to play, I believe, this year. I think we'll probably see, my prediction is one of the two guards, maybe both, play. I think the Murray twins will redshirt. I could be wrong on that. I could see maybe one of the Murrays playing. I don't see both of them playing, but I do think Josh Ogundele is going to play and be a factor this year. They need depth at the five position. Garza can't play all 40 minutes every single night, especially if they're playing three games a week, which is possible if they play in a bubble format where they're trying to play more games in a shorter time period. The depth is going to help Iowa, but they're going to need more depth at that five position if Iowa is going to be successful. All right, that'll do it. We appreciate Alex Brado joining us as always. John, thank you for coming on. I know you're not a sports fan, but you kind of gave us some a perspective that we all needed from someone who, on the outside looking in, someone who maybe hasn't been following. Because I'll be honest, I'm so tired of hearing all the different reports every day, and we will find out which ones were true, which ones were false at some point. The Big Ten's done a terrible job managing this from a PR standpoint, but it was nice kind of being able to fill someone else in and get a fresh perspective on this. So we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
And we'll have you on again sometime. And Alex, maybe next week we'll have an answer. Maybe we'll know. Maybe we'll know next Sunday if what's going to happen. Like I said, I don't know how if you're going to play in mid-October, even if it's the 17th to 24th, we've got to know within the next week or two at the very, very latest. And by the way, there were like six games yesterday. There's another game tomorrow night with I believe it's Navy and BYU. Monday night, if all these games, there were zero cases after that Austin Peay Central Arkansas game the previous week, but if there are no cases after this weekend's game, can we all agree that should put a light bulb above Kevin Warren and the president's heads? I mean, if the current data and the progress we've seen in the testing and all these developments over the past couple of weeks haven't, that should.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that even if that doesn't hold true throughout the season, I mean, it's going to sway public opinion quite a bit, which is going to put even more pressure on the Big Ten than there already is, if that's possible. So yeah, that'll definitely be a big factor.
I believe they need to let them play, protect the student athletes with the best monitorization, and give them motivation to be safe, because right now, as the numbers are showing, they don't have the motivation, in large part, at least students don't. And if you make student athletes no longer athletes, just students, they're going to fall in with the rest of the population. And unfortunately, many of them will get the virus. So if you care about risking their long-term health, I say put them within the confines of a structured environment with the football team and take all the precautions you can and give the season a shot. But again, I don't know it all. We don't know it all, but we just hope we can see Hawkeye football soon, and potentially the Big Ten can be in the conversation for a playoff spot. We don't know what's going to happen with the Pac-12, but I guess it's just as we've been doing for the past, 6 months, Alex? We wait and see, as always. So, again, sure. Thank you to John Orgias. Thank you to Alex Brad. I'm Corey Brada for Week 126 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. We'll be back next week. As always, go Hawks. Hopefully we'll get Big Ten football soon. We'll talk to you next week.